This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Joe Foss Institute is a group formed in tribute to the accomplishments of the ace World War II pilot of the same name, who later attained the rank of general. A luncheon was held today at the National Press Club in Washington to promote efforts to increase a sense of patriotism and respect for the military among today's youth. The plan is to send veterans to schools with videos and other materials to share their personal war experiences in the armed forces. This campaign was formed to address Joe Foss's concern that, quote, there might be an exodus of draft-age Americans in the event of war, unquote. The panel consisted of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz, former U.S. Senator and space pioneer John Glenn, former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Jack Kemp, retired Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and Congressman William Janklow. Matthew Bradley from the D.C. Independent Media Center attended the event and posed the first question from the audience to the panel.
What confidence should the American youth have and these individuals, when it comes to examples as far as matters of life and death go? Mr. Wolfowitz didn't serve in Vietnam. Mr. Kemp diagnosed for a bad knee and went on to serve, play in the football league. And Mr. North, who's been convicted of various crimes, how do they stand as examples to have proper regard?
Well, let me tell you, I'm very proud of everybody who is at this table for all of their achievements.
Gus Grant, chairman of the Joe Foss Institute, responded to the question directed at the panel. Wolfowitz had left at that point, but Oliver North chose not to respond. Afterwards, Matt Bradley caught up with former HUD Secretary Jack Kemp as he exited the event.
With regards to past discussion that about you not serving in Vietnam, how do you reconcile the profile people put up, and how do you want it to be put against your other accomplishments, your other work?
I served in the military. Four years.
But according to the New Hampshire Gazette, Kemp has not served in the military. The paper maintains online database of chicken hawks, quote unquote, those that have promoted or voted for war and hold positions of public prominence but do not have wartime military service. Kemp was diagnosed with a bad knee and avoided service in Vietnam. He continued playing professional football and became an all-star football player and has no known record of war service. In the dark recesses of the world, private contractors go where the Pentagon would prefer not to be seen, carrying out military exercises for the American government. More and more, the people who house and feed troops, repair, maintain, and even operate the high-tech weapons are likely to be civilians. As war on Iraq looms near, we turn to Philip Niekerk, the project manager with the Center for Public Integrity, to get a sense of how many mercenaries are engaged by the U.S. government.
I don't have the number of mercenaries as such, but the number of companies that we found that had operated in the past sort of 10 years or so was more than 90.
90?
So it certainly is a mushrooming phenomenon, which, basically it's a pretty wide field, though. It goes right from the use of private contractors to provide logistics and build bases and so on for the U.S. military. In other words, taking over those kind of almost logistical functions to companies that are actually doing frontline combat. We found at least 90. We believe that there are a whole lot more that just haven't, really hit the radar screen.
Are they in sensitive positions?
In sensitive positions in what sense?
Where they're making decisions about dropping bombs or missiles or which facilities to target.
Well, I think that they've been very, very important factors in the wars in Africa, and the reason for that is that the wars in places like Sierra Leone have only required very little input from the outside to turn the battle, to turn the tide around. For instance, in Sierra Leone, which is an example, it took two helicopter gunships piloted by South African mercenaries to swing the whole war around on the side of the government. You fight talking about ragtag armies, often sort of basically staffed by young kids with very kind of primitive weapons. And if you go in as a force, even a small one, from the First World with NATO-style equipment and, U.S. kind of trained troops and personnel, you can have quite a major effect, major impact on that conflict. So the insertion of both the sort of high-end type private military companies, as well as, you know, an enormous sort of influx of pilots from places like the Ukraine and Russia into Africa during the 1990s, is certainly had a major role on wars and combats in that region.
And so were there units of this nature in the Gulf War, and are there any already prepared to be stationed in Iraq at this time?
Well, you know, this is a new frontier in a sense, and the sense I get with Iraq, I mean, generally, you know, the private military companies would be used in areas where it would be politically very difficult to explain, you know, what the U.S. is doing there. And I think in the case of Iraq, the U.S., you know, obviously has the popular mandate to sort of go ahead and pursue whatever it needs to pursue in that region. So they wouldn't need the political need to outsource for the issue of deniability. But you do have contractors who are getting millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, to build bases, to provide logistics, and to do kind of things that the military forces would have done a decade ago. And you do have some cases where, in order just to sort of relieve this sort of shortage of personnel, you have private companies coming in, for instance, DynCorp, which is guarding the body, which is taken over the bodyguard functions for Hamid Karzai, the president of Afghanistan. And you will find that a lot of the NGO convoys that travel across Afghanistan are being supported and defended by private military companies. So they're there, but they're certainly not in the preeminent role.
Well, is it conceivable that if, for example, if the political support or popular support would somehow dissipate or wane in the U.S., is it conceivable that they might send in a team like this, a unit like this, to actually do what they cannot formally do?
You know, that's speculation that I can't make. I mean, really, that is that's sort of beyond the kind of area of research that we've involved ourselves in.
Okay, that's fair enough. Any final thoughts on your part, Philip?
Well, I think that you know, one has to understand this as a phenomenon that has happened almost below the radar screen, and that the big issue here is accountability. Accountability in terms of if their performance is not up to standard, or if they these companies are not are doing things in other parts of the world that are not acceptable. You know, there has to be, I think, greater oversight by the, you know, by the U.S. government and Congress to make sure that to pull them into line. And I think, you know, they've become almost a necessary evil, but I think that there needs to be much greater regulation of their activities in other parts of the world.
Philip Niekerk, project manager for the Center for Public Integrity. On the celebration of Martin Luther King Jr. Day in Ann Arbor, Michigan, more than 2,000 people, most of them young, from Detroit, marched to support the university's affirmative action program. Dozens of the high school and college students marching carried No to War signs. The woman who distributed the No to War signs to the Ann Arbor march also attended a large MLK Day march in Detroit. She describes the conflict she encountered from the police while trying to distribute the signs.
My name is Jean Wilson. I'm from Detroit. I just came from Southfield, Michigan, where people were afraid to take the signs from me. And I did manage to give about 20 or 30 away when the police stopped me and told me that no war message is not what the Southfield police chief wanted, that it had nothing to do with Martin Luther King. And he ordered everybody that had the signs to take them outside, and they were collecting them. It was amazing. And now I know why the people were afraid.
Thanks to Ingrid Drake for preparing that report. At an anti-war teach-in honoring the birth date of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in Washington, who was a drum major for peace, many denounced the Bush administration's war at home and abroad, railing against Bush's plans for a war on Iraq and an attack on affirmative action. Reverend Graylin Hagler, the pastor of the Plymouth Congregational Church, welcomed all to his activist church.
I want to welcome you to Plymouth Congregational United Church of Christ. This church that was begun in 1881, and a church that we have been opening our doors to movement and opening our doors to make a difference not only in this community but also around the world. Because one thing that is important is that if people of faith are not able to stand up, then all the rest of us are in trouble. If we are unable to stand up, those of us who have belief in God, by whatever name we call God, if we're unable to stand up, if we're unable to lead the way, then we're all in a whole mess of trouble. Boy, Bush said on Martin Luther King's actual birthday, that was the day that he chose to speak out against affirmative action. Now understand the context, because you know all this stuff is so subtle, but it's also thinly veiled. He distanced himself from Trent Lott. But on Martin Luther King's birthday, he winked and blinked to all the Trent Lott followers. He said, "Don't worry, we're going to keep them in their place. Don't worry, we're going to keep them on the plantation. Don't worry." That was the whole idea behind that, was to tell folks in this country who believe in white supremacy that everything is all right, that they may scream and holler, and we may have to give Trent a little step up in secret, but everything is all right. We need to understand that. You know, I was one that didn't want Trent Lott to resign. You know why? Because Trent Lott, there was nothing about him that was any different than anybody else in common. The only thing about Trent Lott is he was stupid enough to say it before the cameras. All of Congress thinks in the same way. It is a white supremacist club. It is a white supremacist mentality. It is time for us to understand that and stop playing games with our own selves. In terms of the war, one thing that is true that Martin King said is that there was an inextricable link between racism, poverty, and militarism. Racism is the stratified culture by which those on the top keep everybody in their place and fighting among each other for the crumbs while they steal all the money and steal all the resources for the world. And we're too busy fighting with one another that we can't see who the real culprit is. And then when there is the lack of opportunity, whether there is a draft or no draft, folk go into military service in hoping to gain some money for school and hoping to get some credentials in terms of a career, doing those types of hope, hoping that when military service is over, that they will be integrated into society. We wrench all those hopes. But sisters and brothers, in military service and in military hardware, a bomb costs money that should be going into a schoolhouse. A bullet costs money that should be going into child care. Oh, our weaponry costs money that should be benefiting our communities and our children's lives. It is time, and that's why we stand up against this war. That's why we stand up against this foreign legion. That's why we stand up against our imperialism into the world and the manipulation of people. It's all about oil. But my son and your daughter should not die for some oil company. Your son and my daughter and your grandchildren and shouldn't die because these greedy folk want to capture all the resources in the world. They shouldn't die, and that's what we stand up for. You know, I'm not tired tonight. We've had a great program, but we need to understand that this is a movement. This is a movement that we're going to move forward. This is a movement that's going to shake up the world. This is a movement that's going to shake up America. Bush, watch out. Rumsfeld, watch out. Watch out. The people of God are coming.
The Reverend Graylin Hagler of the Plymouth Congregational Church in Washington, D.C. Ruby Sales, an alumnus of the first Black Panther Party in Alabama and an alumnus of the Students' Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the director of Spirit House, talked about freedom and the responsibilities of African Americans and their relationship to President Bush.
These are dangerous times. This morning I read in the newspaper that President Bush went to a black church in Landover, Maryland, and that he received a standing ovation. These are dangerous times. What would Martin Luther King think that a black church would give a standing ovation to a man who sends roses to the grave of Jefferson Davis, to a man who wanted to dismantle all of the work that we did in the Southern Black Freedom Movement? And it was work not given to us. It was work earned by the sweat and the blood and the tears and the sacrifices of ordinary men and women, our grandmamas, our cousins, our aunts. I've been thinking a lot about our freedom, and I'm reminded on this day as we celebrate Martin Luther King that for a people, the critical issues is not just to be free, but to entertain the question of what does it mean to live as free men and women in the world, and what are our responsibilities within that question. And we do have a responsibility within that question. I just want to tell you that there's trouble across the land, that we are the chief exporters of violence at home and around the globe. That our massive weapons of destruction have resounded in Africa, Central America, all over third world countries. I hope you notice that all of the countries that are under attack are first world colored countries.
Ruby Sales, director of Spirit House. Thanks to Peace Watch producer Reem Kathuda for preparing that report, with assistance from Serge Michael from the D.C. Co-op and Alan Bushnell from the IMC D.C. Yesterday, political activist and leader of the American India Movement, Standing Deer, was found stabbed in his home in Houston, Texas. There were obvious signs of a struggle, but to date, there is no known motive and no suspects. A few months ago, Standing Deer spoke with Peace Watch.
Well, it looks like Strongman Little Bush and the Gang of Five, as Mumia named them, are just about ready to send our neighborhood kids over to Iraq to murder a bunch of people, just like his daddy, ex-CIA Director Big Bush, did in 91. Before they kick it off, they'll come up with another big lie that will irrefutably tie Saddam to Al-Qaeda. The thing that really tears me up is the big lies that Little Bush has been telling, and how so many people believe every word he says because he's the President of the United States. Some folks think the President would never lie, and he'd never lie to the American people. And they're insulted if you don't believe the President's lies. But you know, it's easy for us Native people to know the government lies to the people. That goes back to our ancestors, when the United States made all those treaties with our people and unilaterally abrogated every single one and continued with the genocide, killing our people like flies. So we know the government lies. And Little Bush, the shrub, is one of the greatest natural-born liars ever to grace the White House. Now his daddy, Big Bush, wasn't no slouch. It must run in the family. Does anybody remember the stories Bush told in 91 about the little babies that Iraq was throwing out of the incubators and letting them die? Of course, that proved to be a lie, but there was so little coverage in the press when the lie was exposed that very few people were even aware of it. They only remembered the smashing front page headlines across this nation about the sweet little imaginary babies being flung out of their incubators. Little Bush can tell any lie he wants to because he never has to prove anything he says with documentary evidence. None of the politicians on the Democratic side would dare suggest Bush Jr. was lying because they want to get reelected. Plus, they want to steal Iraq's oil just as bad as oil czar Cheney wants to. I wonder if they just put a gun to Saddam's head and said, "Your oil or your life," and Saddam gave it up, if that would satisfy their lust to kill and they wouldn't have to go to war. just rob him in a dark alley like the thugs they are. Then at least it would be an honest robbery and Bush Jr. could shut up about weapons of mass destruction and regime change. This whole Iraqi war is based on lies, and the self-serving motivations will never be disclosed until the historians write about it 20 years from now. Little Bush and the Gang of Five needed to change the subject so the people wouldn't be thinking about where is that Osama bin Laden guy that Little Bush was going to track down, smoke him out of his hole, and bring him in dead or alive like the Texas sheriff he is. They didn't want the public to think about the economy tanking or that people lost their life savings due to corporate criminals that had been pillars of the community while they robbed investors of all that they had and then gave vast sums of money to Little Bush's election campaign. So when the midterm elections take place, all the people will be thinking about is their hero commander-in-chief who's bombing Iraq in order to kill all the evildoers and save civilization. Then all the politicians who strew roses in Little Bush's path will get reelected. I'll have to admit it's a brilliant strategy, whoever thought it up. Sounds like ex-CIA director Daddy Bush. He's hated Saddam for over a decade because Saddam not being assassinated in the Gulf War was one of the big reasons Big Bush was a one-term president. The bad thing about a war with Iraq is the way America fights wars. They have their soldiers avoid the enemy while the bombers 10,000 feet in the sky bomb babies sedately by computer. Their smart bombs sometimes come in the window and get in bed with somebody's grandma. A lot of innocent people are going to die when the moral imbecile Bush Jr. robs Iraq of their oil. All during the Cold War, the rulers of America denounced communist Russia for having designs on conquering the world. But now that America is the sole superpower, they've adopted world conquest as their own ambition. They've set their sights on controlling all the Mideast oil so Americans can ride around in their SUVs and shop till they drop. They bombed Afghanistan, killing no telling how many innocent civilians so they could have pipelines to carry the oil and natural gas of the Caspian region to deep water ports. As they always do when they take over a country, they installed a puppet named Hamid Karzai, who requires a contingent of American special forces to guard him to keep his own people from killing him. Next on America's agenda was to conquer Iraq, which is the second largest oil-producing nation in the world. First, they need a regime change because Saddam would never let America steal Iraq's oil without telling the whole world what was going on. The plan, then, is to assassinate the president of Iraq after using America's weapons of mass destruction to destroy any resistance, and then installing a ruler they can do business with, just as they did in Afghanistan. Maybe they'll give Iraq to Dan Quayle. Now that Iraq has agreed to unconditional weapons inspections, Bush Jr.'s handlers have him moving the goalpost back. It was never about weapons of mass destruction anyway. It was and is about three things: oil, oil, and oil.
Standing Deer is best known for exposing a plot to assassinate American Indian leader Leonard Peltier in USP Marion, a federal maximum security prison. In retaliation, the government held him in solidarity isolation for 15 months. Standing Deer was arrested again at the age of 65, kept in isolation, and became the object of mass demonstrations because the government denied him his medication. Standing Deer, dead at age 70.
Rich man's war, industrial streets, class lines, money talks, turning language to paper pieces. Rich man's war. Free man society, raging violent insecurity. Nuclear man, nuclear woman, unclear how to act. Rich man's war. Pershing's cruising Europe. America, Russia. Governmental nuclear views. Industrial allies cutting the world as though they cannot see blood flowing. Rich man's war. Central America bleeding, wounds same as Palestine and Harlem. Three Mile Island in El Salvador, Pine Ridge in Belfast. Rich man's war. The poor, starving for food, starving for land, starving for peace, starving for real. Rich man's war. Attacking human, attacking. attacking being, attacking earth, attacking tomorrow. Rich man's war, thinking of always war, thinking of always war. With machines for ancestors, new unborn generations, chemical umbilical cords are only wiring. In your electrical progress, human lives burnt offerings to the god greed. With lies for ancestors, there is no truth in some futures. Rulers of minds feeding next generation souls to the control machine. Sacrifice ritual for the proper technology. With isolation for ancestors, there's only the present bought by the credit material users. Forging chains binding you to destruction. The compliments of your deities, the industrial priest. Face who we really are. Some point we have no choice. Distant star, distant light. In real world, we are human being. In shadow of real world, we are being human. Neon mask for neon flash. Distant thunder, distant cloud. Passion's rain. Drenched in possession, what we take is hard to do. What we do is hard to take. Someone's are crazy, or maybe we take turns. Dreaming about some kind of life, we say it could have been different. But it wasn't, because we weren't. No matter what, it turns out the same. A lot of things we said weren't true. Industrial stories in an electric instant. Eon mask. Neon flash. Neon flash. Thing is, nihilistic desires. Civilized, gone insane. Didn't imagine it turning like this. Some things start good and go bad. Some things get bad and stay bad. Are we caught in between living a lie or not living at all?
Native American musician John Trudell, Rich Man's War. Thanks to Shannon of Pacifica Station KPFT in Houston for that report on Standing Deer. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Xiaoyan, Matt Bradley, Sam Silsby, and Chris Harlan. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Larry Binsky and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting their website at pacificaarchives.org. If you'd like to support this type of programming, and we'd like for you to, we urge you to visit pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website. You can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback at peacewatch@pacifica.org. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Thank you for listening.